Hello, and welcome back to a new edition. I'm here with photographer Paul Russell, and as you can hear, we're out on the street, or in this instance, we're on Weymouth Esplanade, with the calming sound of the sea behind us, and the gentle sound of an air conditioning switching on and off, and a bit of traffic.
Yeah, we're still halfway between the street and the sea. We're literally caught in the littoral zone.
Hello, Paul.
Hi, Joe. Yeah, I'm what's called a street photographer. That sounds a bit like you're trying to be down with the kids. So I quite often describe myself as a documentary photographer. Street photography is slightly different to documentary photography in that it often has no sort of concerned social agenda. The sort of cliche about street photography is that it's finding the unusual in the everyday. Street photographers sometimes work by working on themed series, but they can also create a story or imply a story within a picture.
You've got a couple of series you've been working on.
Yeah, I've got a few. I've got one about country shows, where I've been going around shows in the southwest and south for about 6 or 7 years now. I'd say that's veering more towards the documentary side, because, you know, I'm trying to capture part of it is the relationship between the animals and their handlers, and also the whole ritual about display, you know, displaying your animals, or displaying your prized vegetables. I mean, it's a theme that's been done a few times before, but okay. I'm hopefully bringing something to it.
And that was featured on BBC's website recently.
Yeah, that was featured on the Photography Viewfinder blog. The person who very kindly put that together told me that it had 220,000 hits. So, you know, this is quite a good way to get people to look at your stuff.
Yeah.
You know, either by having a good website or by having a good website and promoting it on other websites.
Yes, because the hard thing of living in Weymouth is there's lack of financial opportunities to earn a living in your craft.
Yeah, you know, I'm completely unknown in Weymouth, I guess, because it just seems a very... If you're a photographer, it seems a very easy way to get attention by having a good website. You know, if you've got a good website and you've got pictures on it that are easy to view, you know, if you can get interest from the right people, you know, you attract a load of interest, and it just seems to be a lot simpler than struggling trying to get, you know, local exhibitions that maybe not really many people will see. And I just think this is, you know, quite unique to photography, I think, in that, you know, having a website is a good portfolio, whereas I'm not so sure that if you're another sort of visual artist, like a painter or something, I'm not sure if people spend time looking for good pictures, looking for, you know, for other forms of visual art
on the internet. And you were expressing earlier that you thought a website was more important to have a good website than it was to be on Facebook and Twitter.
I think you have to be careful about how you promote yourself, really. I think if you over promote yourself on things like Facebook and Twitter, it can all look a bit sort of needy, whereas if you just have, you know, a good website, but, you know, believe it or not, people will look at it, and influential people, you know, will look at your website. You know, curators, in the end, the word will get round. When I had solo exhibitions around the UK, I've had a few. It's just been people ring me up and saying, "Oh, we took a look at your website. Would you be interested in putting on a show?" You know, I've never made an effort to beg for shows or contact people, or, you know, it's just happened through having a well-visited website.
And the trick to getting a well-visited website is to get stories on big viewed sites like the BBC, and the other one that you're involved in is in public.
Oh, yeah, I've had quite a lot of interest generated through my membership of In Public. I mean, this is a It's a collective of 20 photographers. It was set up in about 2000 by a photographer called Nick Turpin. 20 members on it. In the tiny world of street photography, being on it is seen as being quite a big thing. And the photographers on it are very good and very, very talented. There's Magnum's Trent Park, for example, and a load of good photographers. So I applied to join several times. Didn't quite really think they were interested. And then I got an email out of the blue asking me to join. And that's created a lot of interest.
So perseverance is probably quite a key thing then. Just keep plugging away.
Yeah, well, I think it sounds a bit bland, but I mean, again, coming back to it, I mean, if you've got good pictures and you put them on a website and simply presented so people can see them, your reputation does magically spread, and then you get these mysterious emails out of the blue saying, "Oh, we saw your website. Would you like to put on a show in Northern Ireland?" And you're waiting for the catch, and never is one. So I haven't aggressively marketed my website. I've just tried to keep it reasonably updated and change the front page. If you use things like Facebook and Twitter too much, it can make you look a bit desperate, like you're really. I use them as tools, and I use Flickr as a tool. And I find Flickr a very useful tool to get feedback, but it's something. Flickr, for example, is a website that most professionals would sort of turn their nose up. So although it's a useful tool, I don't really advertise myself as being on Flickr. I just find the feedback from good photographers to be incredibly useful.
You mentioned you've been involved in quite a few group exhibitions. Could you run through some of those you've been involved in the last year or two?
Well, quite a few of them have been associated with a book called Street Photography Now that came out a couple of years ago. And this was sort of tied in with a sort of strange rise in interest in street photography that's come about in the past few years, partly through the work of the collective In Public that I mentioned. They recently reached 10 years old, and there's been lots of festivals like the Derby Format Festival. It all seems to be a sort of perfect storm that's come together in the last couple of years. Quite a few of the group shows that I've had have come about either because I'm a member of In Public or because I've been in the Street Photography Now exhibition that ties in with the book. Again, it's just it's just been the general increase in my own photography and the general increase in the interest in the genre in general.
Someone looking at your CV and what you just said, so you've been in this very important Thames and Hudson book, Street Photography. You've been in quite an important group shows featured on the BBC's website. Would think that, well, there's quite a successful photographer that's earning a decent wage out of their craft.
It's a tricky one, really, because I get sort of emails just about every week from sort of students who want advice or who want to know stuff for projects. I think there's an assumption that if you're being featured in sort of magazines and exhibitions that you're making a lot of money to go with it. But the revenue streams are quite limited, really. I mean, how do you make money from this sort of photography? I mean, you can sell the prints, but the market is sort of saturated at the minute, I think. There's not enough wealthy collectors to go around. You can license images for magazines and books, that's a little revenue stream.
Not a great deal.
Trying to think. Well, I mean, obviously, a traditional form of revenue would be getting commissioned by magazines to do features. But unfortunately, the market for that has really decreased recently. Just in that magazines are not commissioning as much as they used to. they can usually get someone, you know, someone quite good who will do it for, you know, for virtually nothing, because, you know, there's so many photographers out there, you know, who are willing to work for nothing. I mean, there's quite a well-known photographer from Weymouth called Peter Dench. He's been working in for broadsheets for, at least 10 years, and his CV is fantastic, and he's, you know, a very good photographer. But he's been, you know, quite openly online charting the decline in the market for commissioned photography, and, you know, he's been sort of plotting how the number of days he's been commissioned per year has just been going down and down. And, you know, and sort of perversely, he's been making a little bit of money by writing about how hard it is to make money out of photography these days. And, you know, he'll get an assignment for a well-known broadsheet, and then he'll have to go, you know, work in a sandwich shop for a few days.
Somebody will see him as a very successful.
He's a great photographer. He's got, you know, he's got a very impressive CV, but he's been saying the commissions he's been getting have just been going downhill.
What about local opportunities for commissioning? Have you not managed to come across any?
Well, because I haven't really, you know, because I've been talking about sort of somehow bypassing the gallery system with your website. The downside of that is that I've got no local visibility, really, so no one really knows about me.
No.
So, you know, locally. No, I've never got anything, never got any interest locally. That is one of the downsides of me having all this incredible luck via my website and getting people contacting me from around the country saying, do you want to put on exhibitions? You know, I've been a bit, because it's all been so easy, I've been a bit sort of remiss about sort of promoting myself locally. I've got no desire to be famous locally. I would like to be completely anonymous, but the odd bit of local work would be nice to go with it.
What's your main motivation?
I started out by doing the sort of strange documentary street photography stuff that I do. Purely, well, I don't know if you'd call it work. I mean, I enjoy looking at sort of classic photo books, you know, like Robert Frank's The Americans, Gary Winogrand stuff. And for some reason, I just had a strange compulsion to produce some of those sorts of pictures in that style myself. Initially, I never had any thoughts about making money from it. But then when I started to realise I thought I was quite good at it compared to all the other things that I do that I'm rubbish at, I thought I'm going to make some money out of this. And, you know, occasionally an exhibition comes along and you think, oh, it's going to take off. And then it doesn't. You think, oh, maybe I'm not going to make any money out of it. But, you know, the main motivation for me originally was not money, nothing to do with money. It was, you know, a purely strange creative endeavour. It's only when you get success, you get some degree of success, and people start assuming that you're making a load of money from it, you think, well, yeah, maybe I should be making some money out of it. And, and in a way, it sort of, you know, comes frustrating.
Because then it would then fund you to do more work. So it is an obsession, really, because it's quite a long day when you go out with your camera in hand. You know, you set off very early.
Yeah, I mean, when I say I went to Brighton on Saturday, I would have got up, you know, about 5:30 to get the first train out. You know, it's a 3.5-4 hour journey to Brighton, spend the day walking around, taking pictures, get the train back at sort of 7, get back at 11. So it's a long day, and obviously it's, you know, it's an enjoyable journey, but I do sort of consider it as work. And so it is a strange obsession, because, you know, I'm always working on, as well as looking for individual pictures, you know, I'm usually working on series, themed series at the back of my mind. So you can sell them to people more as, well, I've got a project that I'm working on, you know, because people have contacted me in the past saying, oh, we want to put on a show of your seaside pictures, or, you know, I'm trying to work on and promote the country show stuff a bit more. So I've always got the motivation of just the interest in the subject matter, really. And so for every subject I've got, like I've been working on a seaside series and a country show series and all sorts of other series that are sort of forming in my mind, gradual themes. There's always a sort of like normal distribution curve where you start out and you're not very familiar with the subject matter and you're not getting very good pictures, and then you suddenly it all starts to click and you're getting some good pictures over a period of a couple of years, and then it comes to a bit of a slump with familiarity. Say, you know, I've been taking seaside themed pictures for about 6 or 7 years. You start to become over familiar with the sort of with the themes and the scenes, and it can be hard to see that afresh. But the motivation is interest in the subject matter,
and just to get that photograph to capture that moment,
or as well as the photographs that will fit together to form a coherent series. So, you know, as well as just having individual photos that stand together, I think you need photographs, perhaps non-peopled photographs, that give a series a sense of place.
Okay.
So it's not just a series of moments.
So do you have a picture in your head that you try to capture before and then hunt for it?
I don't have specific pictures that I'm looking for, and it's hard to find themes. Hard to find themes that give you enough leeway to take good pictures, because if I think of a project and I can see what sort of pictures I'm going to get in my head, I'm bored with it. So I need a theme that's sort of loose enough to let me take good pictures, but strict enough to make the whole series cohesive. So you could have a series, say, like recreation. I mean, that would be a sufficiently loose but tight theme to hold it all together. Whereas if to take a sort of art photography style theme, I mean, if you think, well, I'm going to do a series about traffic cones or parking meters or stuff like that, I mean, you know, as soon as I sort of know what the pictures are going to look like, I'm bored of it, really. So it needs to be sufficient leeway. Like in the country shows, I know the...
The country shows must be hard, because I know when we went to Melplash, you were thinking that you've taken so many of those pictures you've already captured.
Yeah, I mean, like, as I was saying, the first time I went to a country show, you see there's loads of hands on sheep, there's loads of hands on horses, there's loads of rosettes, and you do close-ups, you know, the risk of making it look a bit like, you know, Martin Parr close-ups and like that. But, you know, there's a whole range of new subject matter, and you can do that for a few shows, but yeah, you go to a few more shows and you think, yes, I've already got those pictures. I need to have something that's going to surprise me a bit, you know, within the landscape, within the semi-familiar landscape of the country show. I need something that will surprise me. But then again, I need a few pictures that are just not mundane, but give a sense of the experience and the place without being clever. You need a range of stuff.
Quite a challenge.
Yeah.
So how do you find interacting with the public? As a street photographer, do you get quite close to your subjects in taking the photos?
I mean, some street photographers do get quite close and almost make it that part of their practice to be aggressive, but I can walk around for hours without taking a picture, because I'm waiting so I can get quite close to people in a non-threatening situation. So maybe where there's a few people gathered together doing something, and maybe they're looking at you, but you can take a picture quite close to them in a non-threatening way, because they're all assuming you're taking a picture of something else, or you're waiting for them to stream by. I can walk around for hours before I feel that I can get in that situation, because I'm not out to ruin anyone's day, really. I mean, I've taken thousands and thousands of pictures, and some, you know, quite close to people. You know, say about, you know, 5-6 foot away from someone. You're going up to someone, maybe just an individual, but I think when it's one person, they need to be somehow interacting with their environment. Or sometimes I've been up to a few people, but sometimes going up quite close, and I've never really had any negative reactions. So you have to do it in a non-threatening way. A lot of the time is feeling comfortable in yourself and being in a situation where you can take an interesting picture that's revealing some relationship between people in the picture, or relationship between the people in the picture and their environment, without behaving like an arsehole, yeah. really, yeah. yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's what I'm looking for.
Would you consider yourself as a professional artist or an amateur?
I don't really know what the definition of professional is. I thought it was someone who made more than 10% of their income from that particular thing, in which case it would be, yes, I'm a professional artist. That's only because I make so little money from it, from my other freelance forms of income. You know, if I had a sort of a 16 grand standard job, my photography would be amateur, but as my income is so low.
Have you even thought about those terms? Whether
doesn't really.
I'm not interested in the term of amateur artist, really, because I feel like they're people, like I say, that can follow this obsession, that fund their obsession to fulfil their creative vision.
I don't know. I mean, the well-known photographer Elliot Erwitt said we should start to treat photography seriously and treat it like a hobby. But I'm not really quite sure what he meant by that.
I totally agree. That goes along with what I'm thinking, really.
But that was his response.
Yeah, because in a way, when I'm quizzing you about earning and living locally, you know, it's all about, you know, your hands will get tied in because you'll have commissions. So even though you might earn a living doing what you enjoy doing, it probably will frustrate you as much as enjoy it.
That's one of the reasons why I've never even, for the country show stuff, I've never even asked for a press pass. Because the problem with from a practical point of view, the problems with the country show series is when there's large animals involved, huge, powerful animals, understandably there's usually a barrier between you and the shot. Sorry, you and the subject. The country shows involve hours of waiting around to get close enough, because I don't like to rely on long lenses. So, I mean, I could, you know, presumably with my meagre pedigree, I could, you know, get a press pass and get all professional, but I just feel that then I would be more, it would be more, I don't know if it's the right word, beholden on me. I would have a duty to portray the show in a slightly different way.
Yeah.
To what I do, you know, if there's some humorous shots in there, they might feel that they were not happy about, you know, maybe we shouldn't have given them a press pass. So as soon as you get permission, there's going to be a slightly sanitised version. I think there was something about what the Olympic sites in London, when they were going up, they commissioned, you know, certain photographers, and that's going to be the officially sanctioned view of the, you know, whereas, you know, perhaps if Magnum wanted to go in there and to give a sort of behind-the-scenes view, they wouldn't be so happy about that.
Also, that's it, because they would then own the images and will choose and edit what comes to show, rather than you choosing and editing.
I mean, going back to, say, Martin Parr, who's probably the most, you know, one of the most famous photographers in the world, I've seen him being questioned about whether he gets press passes or whatever, and he just turns up. Again, going back to the commissioning thing, gives you the license to do what you want, really.
Quite a bit of money supposedly coming in due to the Olympics. We have this thing called the Olympic Legacy. We also have this thing called Cultural Olympiad. Can you see any visible changes?
Not a great deal. I mean, I'm no expert on this. I don't know how much money has been made available, but you know, I would guess it's in the region of quite a bit. I don't, you know, walk around Weymouth and see things that inspire me, really. I can't see things that I can see are going to be a permanent legacy. As I understand it, a lot of the money seems to be on great sort of, you know, transient events, you know, that will maybe inspire local people to go on and be artists. But in terms of physical artworks that are going to last, I haven't noticed very much. I mean, what I've always thought is all these transient things are great, but I mean, I've got friends in Cardiff who are running, well, it happens to be a photography gallery, but it's a very nice gallery that puts on shows, I just, in these situations, I just think all the money that's going into these transient things, I mean, you know, they could run their gallery for, I don't know, hundreds of years. I'm probably being naive about the logistics.
They could run it for 10 years.
But, you know, I just think if some of the money was put into a nice local gallery that, as well as showing stuff, it would also be a, you know, focal point for creative people, really, because at the minute I can't see there's a lot around. I just see all the festival type.
Because the argument for those festival things is it's regeneration and it will extend the tourist season and bring people in who've got money to spend in a time when most tourists have gone home. And as Weymouth, a lot of Weymouth's economic basis is on tourism, very important catchment.
Well, I suppose the flip side of that is small towns are transformed by galleries. So I think even a modest sized gallery would completely change the impression of Weymouth and maybe attract a different sort of visitor. I mean, I love seaside towns. I mean, I love traditional bucket and spade and the seaside atmosphere. There's room for more, really. I mean, there's a limit to how many ice creams you can sell. I mean, I think that you need to attract. It's a huge expanse of beach. You need to attract a wider demographic of people, really. I do like the improved look of the seafront. I think they have improved the look of the seafront. I mean, everyone's a bit nostalgic about the red, white and blue stripy huts. And, no one's that happy to see change. And I've got loads of photographs of them. I've sort of sold pictures of those stripy huts to, I've sold prints to people all over the world and I've had emails from people in Germany saying, oh, I can't believe these huts are going, I've got this one on my wall. So I actually went down to salvage a few last bits of wood when the last hut was broken up. So, no, I think the new style huts and the general sort of toning down of the beach colours, no, I think they make it look nicer. Just going back to the legacy, I just think a gallery completely change the image of a town, but also provide a focal point for artists. So it's got a double benefit, really. I haven't seen the laser lights. I'm sure they're great, but they're not going to be a focal point for artists where I can go and see other artists' work and meet them and chat to other artists. So that's what I think's missing, really. I mean, I don't know enough about the economics of the situation, but I'm just talking about a small space that's showing nice stuff.
Do you want to say what your website is?
www.paulrussell.info. So that's Paul Russell with two S's and two L's. So that really is where all the interest in my photos has come from, really. That's how my solo exhibitions have come about. It's a hub where people have come and discovered my photography.
Thank you for listening to Creative Conversations by me, Joe Stevens. If you'd like to find out more about this show, you can see the blog at creativedialogue.wordpress.com.